I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. We've heard it forever, it seems. A college education will result in higher lifetime earnings. But the rising cost of getting a degree is causing some students and their parents to rethink their options. Today, we'll talk about the difference between the various choices you have, from traditional four-year universities to technical schools, which gets you the best bang for the buck when it comes to what employers are looking for. Then, UMKC basketball star Michael Watson talks with us about having his jersey number retired and how he continues to score with his work off the court in the urban core. And Brian McTavish will be here with his weekend to-do list. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Like it or not, more and more people now view higher education as a ticket to a good job, whether it's a traditional four-year college degree or attendance at a community college or technical school. The job waiting at the other end of all that studying is what matters most to a lot of students. The Kansas News Service, based here at KCUR, has launched an ambitious series on how young people are navigating this journey to employment, with an emphasis on the need for careful decision-making about the choices ahead. Is a four-year college degree worth the debt that many students will incur? Are technical schools a viable alternative? What's cheaper, a community college or a technical school? With us are two reporters with the Kansas News Service team who have been working on this project. They are Celia Yopis-Jepson. Welcome back.
Hi, great to be here.
And Stephen Basaha, who joins us from KMUW down in Wichita. Stephen, good morning to you.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
You know, Celia, it seems as though things have changed. You know, when I was a kid, the assumption was that you'd go off to college or university and get a degree. Your story suggests that today's students might want to be, you know, more strategic in their decision-making here.
Well, that's so that's what economists are suggesting. And I have to say, a lot of education officials are on board with this too, is really thinking about how your path will connect to a job down the line. And I think there's a lot of incentive nowadays for that for a few reasons. Like, number one, nowadays, one out of three people are getting a bachelor's degree. So you're competing with a lot of people with bachelor's degrees. I mean, as you know, like it used to be that putting down BA or BS on your resume could really get you a lot of places. And now with a lot more people who have that credential, that alone, you know, it matters a lot more. What are you picking? And then the other reason to be picky is to think about the cost of college itself. So in recent decades, that cost has shot up a lot faster than family income. So that's it's a really big investment. You need to be asking, what are you going to get out of it?
This doesn't seem to bode well for the good old liberal arts degree, Celia. Is that what you're saying here?
Oh, that cuts straight to my heart.
So, me too. You're getting real close to what I do for a living.
I know. I majored in Latin, and then I have graduate degrees in linguistics and journalism. So
and look at you today.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, but okay, I have to say, in part, I found my path thanks to the credentials I have that I originally had were not relevant to journalism, but it was about having those credentials compared to people who didn't have the credentials, where I, you know, first got my job in journalism, which was actually in another country where the credentials I had were rare. So with my master's degree in linguistics, I got my foot in the door in journalism. But I think you can't, so people need to know that they can't count on just the piece of paper opening doors in the same way that it did in the past. Right. So, so employers are looking a lot more at, like, what exactly is your bachelor's or your, or whatever your credential is.
And what you can do. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Stephen, in your piece, you compare technical schools to community colleges. You know, how are they different, and what might people think about when trying to decide between the two?
I mean, the first thing, major difference, is most people are going to a community college as a sort of funnel, a cheaper way to deal with most of their bachelor's degree, to get to a university, finish a four-year bachelor's degree. But both technical and community colleges offer what they call career and technical options, where it might be an associate's degree that's all about getting you into the workforce, not about going back to get the bachelor's degree, but getting you on the path to that job real fast and getting you a job. There might also be certification options. So both community and technical colleges offer this. Technical colleges offer it a little more. But the main reason that what's surprising, I should say, about that is, despite these similarities, technical colleges have kind of really exploded in the past decade. We are seeing much, much more attendance of technical colleges. They're still just like a fraction of the size of community colleges. But while they've been growing so much, community colleges and universities as well have been shrinking. And probably the main reason for that is where the state is putting a lot of money. They're paying high school students. They're paying for the tuition for high school students.
Yes, I saw that. In Kansas, you're talking about.
Yeah,
yes.
In Kansas. Yeah, so Kansas itself is paying for the tuition, not the fees. In some cases, they are, but usually just the tuition for a student start earning that certification before they even graduate high school. Yeah, a lot of students in high school, before they even had that high school diploma, now have a welding certification, already have jobs, at least job interviews lined up. So that's huge when you think about this question of the investment of a four-year degree and all that money. The idea that before you even leave high school, you could have these certifications, that makes a big difference.
You know, this surprised me from your piece, and it's counterintuitive given the financial pressures that students face going to four-year colleges and universities these days. But you point out that technical schools cost more than community colleges, and yet that's the category that's ascending right now. Should I be surprised by that?
Yeah, it is certainly surprising. I think some of it is a matter of this marketing that technical colleges do push themselves as, we are the answer to a fast path, fast and easy path to a high-paying career. And in many cases, that is true. Community colleges have that as well. But again, most people still view community colleges as this funnel into the university system, which, I mean, we've all heard all sorts of cultural battles around universities. I think that's partially diminished them. As Celia had mentioned, this compete with all these other people that have bachelor's degrees. That's sort of diminished the value of a bachelor's degree to a certain extent.
Yeah.
So with all those different factors, you look at technical colleges, and they look rather like a rather bright option. The thing is, though, if you're a high school student and you could take advantage of this tuition program where you're going to have your tuition covered, it makes a lot of sense, assuming that the career that you want is being offered. There are limited career options. Assuming you want to go down that path, this makes a lot of sense. If you are not a high school student, or you're graduating high school, you don't have the option to do this in high school, the sticker price makes it a little bit more difficult. Oftentimes, per credit hour, technical colleges can cost twice as much, both on the tuition and the fee side. So if you have similar options between the community and technical college, that sticker price can make a huge difference and should be a huge factor in making that decision.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about your story, Celia, again, on the strategic thinking that maybe should go into the paths that young people take these days when it comes to higher ed. You point out point blank in your piece that college remains the single most reliable path to a lifetime of higher earnings. That hasn't changed. Why is that?
That's right. And that's really important to point out, because we're talking about here, you know, what we're talking about here is the risk for diminishing returns on investment on your bachelor's degree. But don't mistake that for the idea that college doesn't matter. So since 2008, Georgetown University researchers say we've actually entered what you could call the college economy. Now, more than half of the U.S.'s kind of middle-class paying jobs are going to people with bachelor's degrees. It's never been like that in the U.S. before.
Huh.
And they don't see that trend going backwards. And if you look at, you know, I have this data on what you earn kind of on each rung of the educational ladder, and it's specific to Kansas. So if you finish high school in Kansas, your median earnings are going to be around $30,000. Get an associate's degree or start college, that's $34,000. A bachelor's degree, that's $49,000, just about $50,000 for those median. So it's not that that, you know, there's no return on investment anymore. People need to understand that. But the other thing economists are pointing out is kind of what Stephen was talking about, is that this concept that major matters most. So actually, you can slice it a lot finer and look at, there are people who are earning a lot better with a two-year degree in STEM and, you know, science, math, those types of fields, than people with a four-year degree. And there are people with, you know, four-year degrees who are earning more than people with graduate degrees, because the reality is that, like, that Latin major doesn't maybe get you, you know. Yeah. I mean, so for example, if you major in math and engineering, just a bachelor's in math and engineering can get you to the 80,000 range for median earnings. So it's actually a much – what economists really want, and many education officials want, is for students and families to sit and look at some of these yes. paths and data and really understand.
Understand the road ahead a little more clearly.
Yeah. Bingo. Not just wander. Because college is not cheap. I mean, this is the really sad thing, right? This is the reality, is that access to degrees is not easy for everyone.
You know, what amazes me in my own teaching up at UMKC up the hill here, so many of my students might even be in their mid-20s, higher 20s. They don't know what they want to do. So not all of them, but so many of them. And you just wonder sometimes, this idea of going out in the workforce and working for a few years, and that before you begin to navigate this system without really knowing what you want to do.
I mean, again, I relate to that because I was the wanderer. But this is the difficult situation we have, and I've talked to some education officials who really struggle with this too. We want to help students now, knowing, you know, the costs that they face and the student debt that they face, to try to find their passion earlier in life. But I mean, one person just tweeted at me that he got an advanced degree. I think it was a PhD in chemistry, didn't like being a chemist. And then I think he went to law school. I mean, the reality is that people don't always know who they are and where they fit in. And even though I think our schools are doing a much better, like, they're trying to really focus more on helping students explore that, you're not the same person when you're 25 as when you're 15 or when you're 13, because now we're doing a lot more of these conversations in middle school even.
That uncertainty carries a price tag. As you point out, the average student leaving a four-year college these days, $27,000 in debt. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, I would say that most people feel that way, or we would probably see more people getting those degrees.
Yeah.
And I think the concern is, you know, figuring out, I mean, some economists are really worried, where is kind of the, at what point do we really rein that in?
Yeah. So will the claim of higher earnings still be a valid one in a decade or two, Celia, as you look at this?
Oh, that's a really good question. And actually, it was so funny. Right before I came here, I received a news update from the Census Bureau saying that the number of people with grad degrees in the U.S. has doubled. And so, I mean, there are economists that are really concerned about degree inflation maybe even exceeding what our economy really needs. Because there are two questions. One is, you know, how many bachelor's degrees or how many master's degrees do we actually need as a country for the jobs out there? And the other question is, what do I do as someone who's going to compete on the market? You see what I mean?
Yes.
The difference I'm trying to make is, well, a third of people now have bachelor's degrees. So, so that ratchets up the pressure for you to get that too. But some economists are worried eventually there's diminishing returns.
We're talking about the strategic thinking needed to navigate the higher education system in this country these days. You know, one key that you write here for students is to consider careers in fields that require a high degree of interaction. And you point to nursing as a prime example here. Why should that be the case?
Yeah, nursing is a great example because it's growing so fast nationally, and in Kansas, it's projected to grow faster, twice as fast as other jobs. And the reason that some economists suggest jobs, like you pointed out, with a lot of kind of education, using communication skills, using critical thinking, is that those jobs are less susceptible to automation.
Yes. Computers can't do those jobs.
Right. let's keep our fingers crossed on
that.
You make me want to knock on wood. No, so the Georgetown chief economist, she told me the idea that we're all going to lose all of our jobs to robots, she considers that as, you know, quote, old as the Luddite argument. She's not sold. She doesn't think that's what's happening, but she wants people to know which jobs are susceptible to automation and kind of think that through.
Well, and if parents and students want some more information here, again, you point out the Kansas Department of Labor actually publishes these annual lists of what employers need most, you know, homing in on those careers that pay better than average. What types of jobs are on that list?
So everything from, you know, nurses, like we mentioned, is really high up, to electricians. There are a lot of skilled trades that pay really well and don't need those four-year degrees. Mm-hmm. So I do think, you know, that it's worth people exploring what do they enjoy, something more hands-on or sitting behind a desk. What type of passion might you have, but there really are paths that probably suit you, whatever your personal interests are, and that really are going to give you a return on investment, but it takes some research.
Yeah,
I would say that those lists are also viewed with some level of skepticism, these lists of high demand jobs, because right up there with nursing in Kansas are truck drivers. And while there's certainly demand for that, that's on their long-term projections. Unlike healthcare, which is expected to continue to have a high need for a very long time in our country, with things like automated cars or self-driving cars, the question about some of these fields, what they're going to look like with our vastly changing economy, these lists should also be viewed with a little bit of skepticism as well, too.
You know, Stephen, again, your piece focused on technical schools. To explain the appeal, you began your piece, which will appear at kcur.org in a few days, by talking about a student named Matthew Fitch, who opted for a technical school. Tell us about Matthew Fitch.
Yeah, so Matthew's interesting because he started off at a community college and he shifted over to a tech college, WSU Tech, specifically mostly because he wanted to change majors. A major he wanted was at the technical college. But the one thing he found that was significantly different was this change in culture, or almost a lack of campus culture. A lot of technical colleges, certainly WSU Tech, they often lack sports teams, they lack mascots, theater programs. A lot of these aspects and clubs that we associate with campus life and kind of this idea of discovering yourself on campus in college, a lot of that's cut away, and there's this kind of laser focus on getting a job. For him, that was perfect. And I should say, he also pointed out that because the campus was a little bit smaller, he felt that he had a better connection with his professors. But for him, he felt much more comfortable in a space where there wasn't really much discussion about partying or anything like that and enjoying your college years in that aspect. But everyone he said was there was laser focused on getting that job.
It's sort of all business, you're saying, as opposed to having some horsing around time.
Exactly. And you can imagine the appeal for that when, I mean, the economy is recovering, but that doesn't mean that people don't still have economic anxiety, especially when you're young and you're wondering about your career path. The idea of, okay, we're just going to focus on getting you a job. And again, to go back to the concerns about the political divide about campus culture, things like free speech zones, a lot of those issues that people might have with college campuses don't exist as much. They still may exist to some extent, but they're certainly de-emphasized on technical colleges. And to go back to Celia's point about the investment people make in their college careers, one thing Matthew had pointed out was that if you go a certification route at technical college, it's also optional in community college, you could get into a career and a decently well-paying career, depending on if you select correctly and do your research. You could get into that career relatively early, and if you decide to change careers, it's not like you got that chemistry PhD that costs you not just a lot of money, but also a lot of time. Mm-hmm. You could change career paths a little bit more easily.
You know, another edge that you point to when it comes to technical schools, Stephen, is this idea that they're more in tune with and faster to respond to the needs of employers. Give us an example of that.
Oh, yeah. So one of the best examples is last December, I believe, Spirit AeroSystems here in Kansas announced, or here in Wichita specifically, they announced 1,400 new jobs would be coming. And they credited groups, specifically WSU Tech, for helping to train workers fast. And WCU Tech, when I spoke to them about that, they said, well, we had this sheet metal program. They said they needed a lot more sheet metal workers. We changed mid-semester that program from 8 weeks to six. So they that's a pretty significant cut down in how fast you're training people. So they, WSU Tech and other technical colleges argue that they are much, much faster at responding to the needs of these business workers. They often have their board of trustees have much more representatives from business on them, at least when it comes, again, looking at WSU Tech specifically. Community colleges and other educators kind of dispute this. They say, hey, we could be just as fast at responding to businesses. But you certainly hear it a lot more from technical colleges. They argue that they are much more employer-focused.
You know, going back to the whole cost factor, Celia, and this need to think strategically, you talk in your story about the cost of a degree and how much it can vary from school to school. You offer information, for example, on aerospace engineering to illustrate that point. Explain that.
Yeah, we have a list with resources on that we put online today. I hope people will check it out. So you can do some shopping and make a smarter decision. There's good data that will show you what you'll get for different majors. And actually here in Kansas, we have a tool called Kansas Degree Stats that you can look up specific programs and see what it will cost at different colleges here in Kansas, and also what the graduates tend to earn, and also what they tend to get in scholarships. So if you look at aerospace engineering, let's say I want to do that. I can compare KU and Wichita State, and I can see they both have that. Wichita State's will be maybe $20,000 cheaper, but I think now, on the other hand, the KU students get more in scholarships on average, but not enough to close that gap. So maybe that's a $15,000 gap still. And then you can look at their pay 5 years down the road and see that their paychecks are pretty much the same. So you can make some calculations there with hard data that's aggregated from actual students who made that journey before you.
You know, so the bottom line from this series is, again, I'm repeating myself, but this idea that parents, students need to think strategically, do a little research about the journey they're about to embark on here. Outside of reading your series, which will be posted at kcur.org in the days to come, Celia's story is already up. Stephen, where can people go to begin to think through some of these issues?
Ooh, it is tricky. I mean,
it is tricky.
Using things like the Kansas Degree Stats are a great option. Going to using resources like the Department of Labor, looking at what jobs are actually growing. Some of it is just thinking creatively. Like, again, you might see that truck drivers are where there's a huge demand right now, but there's not necessarily an easy spot that's going to tell you, view that with some skepticism because of automation. So I have a lot of sympathy for today's students.
Yeah,
One thing I will say about this program, Excel and CTE, that pays for high schoolers to take these different technical courses, is that they do focus on what are listed as high demand, high paying jobs. So the I would say Kansas is invested in trying to help students get to these jobs that will set them on a good path.
Celia, anything you'd add to that?
Yeah, I would say high schools are working with students a lot too. They have access to programs where students can online navigate through to learn about different career options and such. So families can talk, you know, with high school counselors, with teachers. Often schools have classes where students can explore these things. What we think of home ec when I was a kid, now you often explore a lot of these questions as well.
Okay. Again, the stories in this series will be appearing at kcur.org. Celia Yopis Jepson's piece is already up. Stephen's will be up in a few days. Thank you both for your time today. Sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Again, that was Celia Yopis Jepson and Stephen Basaha, who joins us from KMUW down in Wichita. Time for a break. When we come back, we'll meet the all-time leading scorer for UMKC men's basketball team. He just had his jersey retired. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday in the show, we talked with mayoral candidate Scott Wagner about how he'd handle economic development and reduce violent crime in Kansas City. Hear what he had to say. You can go to kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, learn about the must-see movies our film critics think you'll love and a last-minute look at this year's Academy Awards. Join us for that on KCUR's Up-to-Date tomorrow. Well, when former UMKC basketball star Michael Watson ended his college career back in 2004, he held five league career records. 15 years later, the university's all-time leading scorer is making history once again by becoming the school's third athlete to have his jersey number retired. A couple highlights from Watson's career include a 54-point performance in a double overtime win over Oral Roberts. He also played in a 2003 December game when the Ruse went to beat Kansas State by 41 points. After being drafted by the Boston Celtics and spending some years playing overseas, the basketball giant returned to his hometown of Kansas City and worked as a minister. Nowadays, you can see Michael announcing for high school and college basketball. You can hear him on Kansas City's ESPN radio show, The W, and he stayed connected with his nonprofit, Mentality by Michael Watson. He joins us here in the studio, and congratulations on the great honor. So nice to have you here.
Thank you so much. And appreciate you guys having me.
What does it mean to you, Michael, to have your jersey retired? I mean, you're just the third in school history. That's saying something.
I mean, it means a lot because I grew up really 0.9 miles from the campus. I grew up right on 46 in Paseo.
Yeah.
And so I grew up passing UMKC and going to some games, watching Tony Dumas and Eddie Smith and those guys play.
Yeah.
And having that honor for me is really surreal. And I feel like it's not just me who got retired. I feel like this entire city they got their jersey retired, so it means a lot.
What was your reaction when you found out about all this?
I was shocked. I was really shocked because I know UMKC just doesn't do this. We're a school that's trying to build tradition and build history in the athletics program. And so when Dr. Brandon Martin called me and told me, it was just a real moment. You know, you don't think about those things as a kid. You think about playing, wanting to go to the NBA and things like that, but you never really think about one day they're going to retire your jersey.
So this ceremony took place last Saturday. It had snowed a whole lot. Did that dampen your enthusiasm at all?
Not at all. I mean, you can see the pictures from the crowd. It didn't stop deter people from coming out on Saturday night. We had a lot of support for the men's basketball team and there to watch the ceremony.
The team has really struggled. Why?
They're just learning how to win. Young team, very well coached. That's one thing I will say. They're very well coached. It's just a young team. They're figuring out how to win games at the end. They lose a lot of close games if you watch them follow those guys. They lose a lot of close games in the last minutes of the game, just closing it out. And that's the thing that people understand. You can score baskets, but you got to learn how to win and learn how to close out games.
You know, throughout your college career, you scored, get this, folks, 2,488 points. That's a lot of baskets. You were almost unstoppable. Did it feel that way sometimes?
I felt that way every time I came on the court. I felt like, you know, that was my mindset. My mentality was to go out there and
You can't stop me.
No, you can't stop. I didn't care who it was, how tall you were, what the scheme was. I felt like I couldn't be stopped. And so that mindset was where I think got me throughout my college career and pro career.
Well, what made you attend UMKC when you could have gone other places?
Why not UMKC? That was my motto. I felt like we had an opportunity to build something great at the Division I level. We would play all the top schools anyhow, so why not stay home, allow my family to watch me play, and try to build something and leave a legacy here at home?
You know, as a student here, you had a criminal justice and psych major. Why was that your focus?
Well, the head of the department was a great friend of mine, and he just had me interested in criminal justice and in the study of the criminal justice reform system. And for me, it was important just to know how it worked. I like psychology because I'm a people person, so I like to learn how people are wired, how they work, why they think and do the things that they do. So for me, it was just an interesting thing to study. But make no mistakes about it, I went to school for basketball.
How did the degree help you after school?
Well, I mean, just helped me build my network. For me, you can't get anywhere. When I retired from pro basketball, I was fortunate enough to play for 9 years and move back to Kansas City. And my network was here from being a UMKC student. And really, the degree helped me just when people saw UMKC. It's a lot of UMKC alumni in the city. And so just being able to come back, have that degree, have that, you know, say that I completed that was a big thing.
So you went on and you signed as a free agent with the Boston Celtics. You played overseas in five different countries. Tell us about whatever life you had in the NBA. Is it what you thought it was going to be?
It's everything you can't imagine it. It's something that
you,
it's
you can't
own,
imagine.
You
it?
Can't imagine it. Unless you're there, you can't imagine that just what it is. It's its own world. I mean, everything is tailored to what you need to be successful as an athlete, from food to treatments to therapy to practice. I mean, it's your job. And so everything is done at the highest level of excellence. And from the GMs down to the players to the managers and the coaches and the staff, I mean, everything is done 100% and at the top of you can get. And so for me, it was a world of its own. I enjoyed every trip, you know, every opportunity we got to play in a new arena and play against some great players, LeBron and Kobe and those guys back in the day. And they were younger than their prime. So it was I was a fan. And so that was the biggest thing that people realized. It's like when you're in the NBA, you're a fan of Paul Pierce because he was on my team and those guys you grew up watching. And so now you get an opportunity to play alongside of them. For me, it was the best experience of playing basketball. You get to play at the highest level, and that's what you dream about doing.
So you played against Kobe Bryant.
Yeah,
and
Kobe,
LeBron.
You
looked Kobe right in the eye, the Cobra, right?
The Mamba.
The Mamba.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
What was that like for you?
Well, it's just a real feeling. I mean, it's like you're watching it, but you're not watching it. It's like you're there, but you're not there.
Yes,
it's
I
one of those type
is.
Of things, and people don't realize how big these guys are. I mean, I'm 6'1". These guys are 6'7", 6'8". And they play like I do. So it's trying to guard somebody who is literally 7-8 inches taller than you, but they have the same skill set. And then you got guys like Dwight Howard was number one pick in 2004. So he was playing on for the Orlando Magic.
The big center.
And watching him go up against Kendrick Perkins, you know, Kendrick Perkins is on my team. And it was just like these are massive men out here playing the game. For me, it was a moment you can't really put into words. But you know, once you experience it, it's like nothing like it.
Did you feel you can compete? Because after all those years
sure.
of walking on the court at UMKC and thinking I'm unstoppable, no one can stop me. Did you ever walk on an NBA court and think, well, maybe LeBron can stop me?
Well, I'm gonna tell you the truth. The first day of NBA camp with Boston, Doc Rivers was my coach. It was his first year in Boston.
Yeah. Great coach, right?
Great coach. I mean, we had a guy named Marcus Banks play for UNLV, was a lottery pick in 03. Well, that first day of practice, I couldn't get the ball up the court against this guy. This guy was just as quick. He was just as strong. He was just as athletic as I was. And so I had to go up back to my hotel room and figure it out. Like, man, can I do this? You know, but I had called my coach Dvosik, and I told him about what was going on. He said, Mike, play your game. You're trying to conform and be a point guard and do all these things. He said, play your game. Next day I went out there and I played my game. I was a scorer. You know, I was a shooting guard. I was a scoring guard. And so for me, trying to play point guard, that wasn't necessarily my game at that time. So I had to go out there and play my game. And those NBA athletes, they'll challenge you and they'll refine you. And if not, you'll be gone.
So the difference between you and someone like LeBron or Kobe is that they're just as quick, they're just as fast, only they've got 6, 7, 8 inches
on
you.
They have that size. You can't teach size. That's what the NBA says. You can't teach 7 foot. And so they have that size. They have just God-gifted athletic ability and talent. And those guys' mindsets, you know, the Mamba mentality is one where he's always on destroy mission. He's always trying to destroy anybody in front of him.
Did Kobe talk to you during the games and say,
"Well,
get out of here, rookie. Get out of my way."
No, Kobe didn't talk unless you talk to him. He's one of those guys. Unless you talking to him, he's going to hit you for 60 points. He's one of those guys.
So you don't want to talk to him.
You don't want to talk to Kobe.
You don't want
to talk to
up.
Michael. You don't want to talk to guys like Gilbert Arenas and those guys who are just when they get stirred up and get going, they're unstoppable.
Mm-hmm. And that's pretty amazing even to think about,
right? Oh, yeah, for sure. It is.
One day, then, you got a call from God. It told you to give up playing basketball. What happened to you, Michael?
Well, for me, it was about, you know, I've always had a calling to do the things of God. And so for me, when I was playing, I felt like I was kind of drifting away from that a little bit. And so I took time off to come back home and really got back to focus and got back into my studies and things. And so it was all about being grounded, all about refocusing. Refocusing my energies and understanding I was transitioning as into an older adult. I was 26, 27. And so going through your 20s, you're still figuring it out. All my life I knew basketball. So I had to get established and start to settle myself in for life after basketball.
But people couldn't believe you were walking away from basketball.
Yeah, I walked away from a lot of money, a lot of fun. But, you know, the thing about it is I got opportunity to continue to play. I went back after I got settled for a year, went back and played and played in my native Puerto Rico for the next 4 years and won a championship. And so for me, it was well worth it taking that time to refocus.
How difficult was it for you to walk away at the end of the day when you did say goodbye to basketball? How tough was it?
That's one of the toughest things ever. I tell people it's like ending a relationship or a marriage.
I
mean, it's just a tough thing because you have to you become a civilian, it's like I call it. You're used to playing in different countries every week. You're used to traveling, used to living out of hotels. You're used to those type of things. And so your world absolutely slows down. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate enough to be able to, you know, not have to work or anything like that. So I spent a couple of years in Puerto Rico. We have a home there. So we stayed there for a while and decided to move back to Kansas City as our daughters were getting older to be around family and friends. And so just getting back and getting back into the flow of being a civilian for me was a tough thing for sure.
You know, when you came back here, you started working as an athletic director for a few groups around town. What were those? Where did you go?
I did the Boys and Girls Club because I grew up a Boys and Girls Club kid. So 43rd in Cleveland, did opportunity to do that. Then I went on to YMCA.
That's giving back, seriously.
Yeah,
isn't
for
it?
Sure. I mean, you're not making any money. You're doing it for the love and for the kids and being able to be back where I grew up. I grew up at the Boys and Girls Club and from 5 years old. And so being able to be back there and seeing kids now and being able to pour into their lives and just be, you know, a figure for them was so important. After that, I went on to do the YMCA, did the same thing there. Then actually joined the board of the YMCA, so sat on that for like 4 years, and just really just being in the community. For me, that was important. Then I think that one of the greatest things is being able to do it, athletic director for the school district of Kansas City, where, you know, I went to school and where I played and happened to get their sports back online and bring that energy back. For me, that was one of the best things ever, because I knew I was only going to be there for a few years and that was what I wanted to do, but it was important to reestablish those guys, get those guys back online and kind of reignite the fire for sports in the IL.
I'm just trying to put myself in your shoes. I imagine it took some patience.
Oh my goodness.
Going from that high level pro basketball intensity to something entirely different.
Yeah, it did. But I mean, for me, I was always the guy before basketball. I was always I'm just Mike, everybody, Mike Watson. So it wasn't like it was hard to reconnect with, you know, where I'm from. It's who I am. I think for me, the biggest thing was just understanding and helping getting other people to understand the importance of athletics. And the role they play in the lives of students and understanding that it's a pillar just as much as academics is. And so that was really my calling card and really kind of my trumpet as I went around and worked to reestablish it.
Michael Watson, the all-time leading scorer for UMKC, is my guest. He just had his jersey retired. You also put together the first multi-sports camp at Central High School.
Yeah.
What made you do that?
That was big. I sit on the board of Fellowship of Christian Athletes as well, and one of the things that we wanted to do was connect with the inner city. They never had a multi-sports camp done in the city ever before, and so FCA has a model of doing camps where they offer four or five different sports, just get people just used to and acclimated to different sports. And so we did our own there at Central High School, my alma mater. We had about 300 kids come out, and we had it fully sponsored, so the kids didn't have to pay anything for food, for, you know, church, and any of the things that they took home. And so that was so important and so big for me, because I got to do it back where I was from.
Yeah,
I got to help kids who their parents. It was funny because at that time, now I was helping kids who I went to school with their parents. So it was a great opportunity for what we got to do.
You also started Mentality by Michael Watson. What is Mentality by Michael Watson?
Mentality is a nonprofit youth sports organization that focuses on kids between ages of 6 and 17. And so right now we have 7 youth basketball teams, K through 8th grade.
Wow.
Our 8th grade elite team is ranked number 11 in the nation, so they're playing really well. But it's all about exposing kids to sports. We have a volleyball program. We also have a track and field program called Sprinters Elite. So it's all about having kids being exposed to sports, getting coached at the highest level, and then helping them understand the mental aspect that it goes into playing sports, but how it relates to life. And I think for me, that's the biggest thing that I learned.
Trying to make that connection.
Exactly. And for me, the discipline that came with being an athlete is something I still use today in my own life, and I teach my own children. Like, that discipline, it goes into your school, it goes into how you approach the day, it goes into, you know, if you run into an obstacle, do you just sit there and wait for something to happen, or do you figure out a way to get around it? And so that's what we teach our kids.
You're also executive director of the Raytown Emergency Assistance Program. What's that?
So REAP is a nonprofit in Raytown. We service the Raytown School District residents. So it's about 60 square miles. We have Kansas City Independence and Raytown. We help people with utility assistance, rental assistance, and food pantry assistance. So people may have fallen on hard times, just need a hand up. That's what I do as executive director. I raise money. I fundraise to do those things and help connect people to different resources.
You're wearing a lot of hats.
It's fun. I wouldn't know what to do if I just had to sit at home all day.
You just go.
You got to go until you can't.
You still play ball?
I play with my eighth graders a little bit. I'll get out there and I call it baptism by fire. So I get out there and play and just totally destroy them. So keeps them humble. It keeps them humble.
Can you still dunk?
I can still dunk at 30, almost 39. I can still get up there and dunk. It's not beautiful, but it works.
You know, it's too bad. If I didn't have these two new hips the last couple years, I could have taken you. You know, I know I could have, and
okay.
I've been told I could have, and now we're never going to have the chance.
There you go. Lucky you, huh?
No, let's just assume I could have. Okay?
There you go. You got it. You got it.
That's Michael Watson, again, the all-time leading scorer for UMKC. He just had his number 22 jersey retired. Michael, what a pleasure to meet you. Thanks for coming
in
today.
Hey, thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Coming up, Brian McTavish in your weekend to-do list.
You found your greener pasture in a mansion on the hill, with a flashy foreign car to drive and lots of time to kill. But Lord, my mind keeps on remembering the day when we were down to nothing, nothing sure looked good on you.
Well, look who's in the house. Brian McTavish is here to talk about some neat stuff to do on the upcoming weekend. Despite the snow, despite the cold, there's still fun stuff to do. How are you?
What snow? It's all virtually, in my mind, gone.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's just go with that. Yes, let's go with that. Let's go with Gene Watson.
Tell us about him.
Gene Watson's one of those relatively ordinary people.
Yeah.
With a great voice and fantastic chops.
Yeah.
If you saw him in the supermarket line, you'd say, hey, hi, buddy.
How you doing?
He's not instantly recognizable, but my gosh, he can sing. He can still sing. He's 75.
No kidding.
And I guess coincidentally, but it's rather interesting, he charted 75 country hits.
75.
Over his career so far. I'm not saying you're done, Gene.
Yes.
But starting in the 1970s, he had some five or six number ones, but like this one, When We Were Down to Nothing, Nothing Sure Looked Good on You. Somebody took her away. When she didn't have a dime, she loved him. When she got a dollar bill, she didn't.
Where do these lines come from? That's what makes country music country music.
They come from the country well of song.
Where's he going
to
be?
Well, there you go. You're cutting to the chase. 8:30 Saturday. Hey, tickets left. Star Pavilion at Ameristar Casino. And if you're lucky, he'll sing "Should I Go Home" or "Should I Go Crazy?" And I don't think that's a rhetorical question.
Okay.
Also, he does "Maybe I Should Have Been Listening." Maybe, Gene? Really? I think maybe you should have been listening. Otherwise, maybe she wouldn't have gone somewhere else.
I'm a little guilty of that sometimes.
Well, we're all a little guilty of that. Gene, you tell him, Gene. He's going to tell you and me and everybody who shows up for a good old country time. Gene Watson, Saturday at Ameristar.
Hear this kind of music that often anymore, do you?
You got to tune into this show.
I guess you do.
So I don't know. Don't misbehave or misbehave or whatever you want to do. This is, of course, Ain't Misbehaving from Long Ago and Far Away by the Charleston
Chasers.
Thank you for being there for me. So Saturday from 1 to 2 in the afternoon at the Kansas City Museum, which is now temporarily located at the historic Garment District at 800 Broadway. So you can go and get a Charleston dance lesson from 1 to 2:30 Saturday. You can learn.
Is that a hard step to learn? I don't know anything
about it. It's an hour and a half. Hey, if they're giving it an hour and a half, I think by the 89-minute mark, you're going to be a pro.
Okay.
So you can learn the basic and maybe more moves. If you're there, they'll all be following you to that extraordinary dance of the Roaring Twenties, the Charleston, when jazz was rising and flirty flappers flat out flourished. Go ahead, take that away.
Wow. That was impressive. Oh, you practiced that for the last 5 days? I bet you did.
Six.
Yeah, be sure to see Brian's 6 extraordinary non-snow things to do in Kansas City this weekend. You'll find that list at kcur.org. Okay, let's scoot on here and talk about the Jackass reality TV star who's going to be in town.
Yes, let's, shall we?
Yes.
Okay, does the name Steve-O ring a bell?
I've been called that many times.
That's right.
Yeah.
I really
but I'm
had...
not the Steve-O you're talking
no,
about.
No, well,
which is par for the course.
As far as we know. Okay, so it's Steve-O, the self-endangering jackass reality TV star, a.k.a. Stephen Gilchrist Glover. He's tackling stand-up comedy these days. You know, on Jackass, he would get himself into all sorts of terrible situations, you know, doing bizarre and tasteless things that were dangerous for him to do. And so he's doing it on the road. He's sharing a multimedia show and videos of his nuttiest stunts. Now, let's hear Steve-O talk a little bit about how this was hard to sell to TV people, and that's why he's doing it on the road.
And then for the other buyers, it's like, are you kidding me? In some cases, it was just so, like, outlandishly explicit that people are just like, we just can't show that. And then in other places, they're like, we're like comedy snobs and you're not prestigious enough in the space. So I ended up sitting here like on this nuclear bomb that doesn't have a home.
Okay.
So, you know, it was too much. Think about this. It's too much for any streaming service. It's too tasteless. It's too awful. It's too crazy. I mean, you know what he used to staple things to things you're not supposed to be stapling.
No,
he does things to himself. It's crazy nuts. So, but here's the thing. You can go Friday, two shows Friday, two shows Saturday. The early show is sold out.
And if he's stapling himself the whole time, that could be, you want to catch that early.
He might come stapled. Yeah, it's at the Kansas City Improv at Zona Rosa up north. Here's the deal. Maybe one day some TV bigwig will turn his comedy into a TV special, but I wouldn't hold your breath.
Okay.
Unless that turns on Steve-O.
There was a wild colonial boy, Jack Duggan was his name. He was born and reared in Ireland, in a place called Castlemaine. He was his father's only son, his mother's pride and joy. And dearly did his parents love the wild colonial boy.
That's Eddie De La Hunt.
Yes,
always
it
liked him.
Is.
He's been here before,
and he'll be here
guy.
Again. He's well worth bringing back. It's never too soon, and Eddie would agree, to wear the green, right?
Never.
So let's go be part of the 8th annual Irish Winterfest. I mean, there are several Winterfests going on. I guess winter just has a lot of itself to give. Anyway, check out the Irish Winterfest that commences the St. Patrick's Day season. It's only a few weeks away, with plenty of swell Irish music and dance by Eddie and other local and regional performers. Eddie is a treasure from the Emerald Isle,
is
he not?
Yes, he is, absolutely.
And he is authentic because he is Irish. Irish?
Irish?
No, I'm Irish. He's Irish. You're shaking your head. Can I come back next week?
Yeah.
Can I come back?
Yes,
okay. We'll see how it goes.
You're getting close.
Ooh. Yeah. Only one more item. Saturday from 3 to 10, go to Drexel Hall at the Kansas City Irish Center and do the Irish Winterfest.
And finally today. Let's talk about the farm, can't we?
Let's listen.
Yeah.
I mean, golly gosh, yes, it's the Western Farm Show.
Was that show on, what, Green Acres, mid-60s?
Mid-60s, late-60s, and all those hills. You know,
I was a little boy.
Green Acres, the Beverly Hillbillies, Petticoat Junction all got pulled, canceled by CBS proactively because they wanted that new hip market, the Mary Tyler Moore Show market.
Yes.
It was a shame. I love those silly old shows. Anyway, where was I? Oh, the Western Farm Show, 9 to 5 Friday and Saturday, 9 to 4 Sunday at the American Royal Center. It's where both farmers and non-farmers can explore the modern version of the Green Acres Dream.
Hmm.
That's right. And do you know that this is National Future Farmers of America Week?
I did not.
You do now, and so does everybody else, especially the future farmers. Check it out. No snow. Have a great time out there this week.
And that's Brian McTavish and your weekend to-do list. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yesterday in the show, Grammy Award-winning jazz vocalist Kurt Elling told us about his take on jazz and performing. Hear that in other episodes. Just go to kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, the film critics are back. They'll discuss some of the Oscar-nominated short films that you can catch this weekend over at the Tivoli. You can find and follow us on Twitter. We're at kcurup-to-date. Follow me, at Steve Kraske. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Devin Davis, and Elizabeth Ruiz. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.